Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes the political economics column in the journal. He is in London observing the United States once upon a time, the year 2022. Reporting right here, talking to Joe while he was in London. The inflation rate, described as the consequence inflation level, in other words, all the food was getting expensive, not just one or two items, was then recorded at 9%. And there was panic in the land. These many years later, the Federal Reserve has done something of its work, and the rate is nowhere close to that. It's headed to 2%, we're told. However, there's a great deal of attention to what happened in 2022, I learned from Joe's most recent column, because there are distinguished voices, economists, who say that the cause of the inflation of 2022 was supply chain. I can recall that explanation from the Federal Reserve at the time. Supply chain, meaning all those container ships stacked up outside of Long Beach coming from China, were not able to deliver the goods to us in the various stores and markets across the nation, and therefore prices rise. That was the explanation. I thought that explanation was by the board, and we were now concentrating on the extreme spending by the late Trump administration and the whole of the Biden administration. Several notable examples are still being spent. However, I learned from Joe that is not a uniform opinion. There is a school who's still with supply chain. Wow. Joe, a very good evening to you. Supply chain. All right. What about the spending? What about the spending by the Biden administration? Does that get attention from these experts? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Well, I mean, that is exactly the question. And I think that you have just crystallized the, you know, what's going on with this debate right now, because we have had over the past few years the highest inflation that America has seen in 40 years. Voters were really angry about it, and they blamed the Biden-Harris administration, and particularly all of the spending like the American Rescue Plan, the $1.9 trillion that they did in 2021, the Inflation Reduction Act, which no one actually knows how much that's going to end up costing. Voters blamed these policies for the inflation. And yet, what you see emerging is this debate among professional economists to figure out what else one can blame. And as you pointed out, a popular solution, in fact, all along, a popular scapegoat has been the snarled supply chains arising from the pandemic disruptions. Remember when we had all of the lockdowns, all of the shutdowns, people couldn't work, the ships were getting, you know, jammed up in the ports, and there wasn't anyone to unload them, and that caused prices to start going haywire. And so I think that there's been a move, and this goes back several years, to try to blame some of these supply side factors in the economy for the inflation, instead of looking at demand side factors like the, you know, bad monetary policy from the Federal Reserve and other central banks, or fiscal spending from the Biden-Harris administration and other governments around the developed world. And I think that partly there's a theoretical element to this. I think that a lot of conventional economists come from a school of thought that, you know, is primed to downplay the significance of factors like the fiscal stimulus or monetary policy and inflation. And then there's also the much earthier motivation right now that a lot of economists had invested a lot of their professional reputations and professional energy in advocating for a lot of these spending and monetary policies that now the voters have rejected. And so I think that you're discovering this rearguard action on the part of some economists to come up with some other factor that they can blame other than the policies that they themselves supported at the time.
And the supply chain argument, I understand, has substance then. But that isn't how inflation works, is it, Joe? And you asked that question in your column. What do they think inflation is?
Well, I think that this is really the heart of the conceptual problem that they run into, because it is absolutely true that a lot of disruptions on the supply side of the economy caused prices to rise, especially in 2021 and 2022, because you had disruptions to supply chains, which meant that you could have scarcities for some goods. And so you would ordinarily expect that the prices would go up, you know, and other factors like that arising from these disruptions. But the thing is, you have to go a step further than that, because remember, inflation isn't an increase in some prices. It's an increase in most or all prices across the board. And so ordinarily what you would have expected to happen in normal conditions is that if the prices for manufactured goods are increasing because they have gotten snarled up in the ports, you know, because of these supply chain disruptions, you should expect that demand for those goods will fall, or that, you know, because those prices might be rising for things that people have to buy, like a new washing machine if your old one is broken, people will be spending less on services, and so that will cause the prices of services to fall. And your price level ends up staying roughly the same. And so the great puzzle that economists have to grapple with is, why is it that these increases in prices because of the supply chain disruptions for some goods filtered through to an increase in prices for everything instead of kind of causing some offsetting price declines elsewhere? And that's the real question that I think that a lot of these economics defenses of Bidenomics kind of skip over. They sort of miss that step. But voters didn't miss that step and did ask that question.
See if I understand this, Joe, because I was not trained to understand economics. Relative prices are not the same as price level. Price levels are not the same as inflation rate. Inflation rate is the problem. That's it. It's not, this is more expensive than that, therefore there's gouging going on. Or it's not the price level that they've achieved this week. It's the inflation rate, and it's uniform through the economy, if I understand correctly. Gasoline prices, the price of bologna, and the price of wood for a renovation in your house are all going to rise at the same rate. Is that correct, Joe?
Pretty much. I mean, basically, the thing that you notice if you have a general increase in the price level is that the prices of everything are increasing, and they might not always be increasing at the same rate. Some prices might go up faster than others. But the point is that they are all increasing instead of some price increases triggering offsets and others. So, you know, if you look back at recent history, the story throughout the 1990s is that actually the prices for a lot of services in the U.S. were increasing, you know, pretty rapidly, but you didn't notice because at the same time, the prices of manufactured goods were falling. So the overall price level stayed the same, but kind of the relative balance of what people were paying for toaster ovens versus haircuts would change a bit within that price level. And that's kind of what ordinary economic theory would predict if you think back to your economics 101 microeconomics course that, you know, might teach you that if you are if you have apples and oranges in the economy and everyone has the same amount of money to spend, if the price of apples goes up, people are going to have to consume fewer oranges, and that will eventually cause those prices to fall. So the real thing you have to ask to get to the inflation that we had is, why was it that consumers were able and grudgingly willing to pay higher prices for everything instead of making these trade-offs?
Common sense says not everything comes in a container ship from China. In other words, inflation is everywhere, not just what we buy. It's everywhere. Was that explained then or now, the supply chain school?
Well, see, that's the piece that this line of thinking struggles to deal with, because I think if you read some of the academic papers or some of the blog posts and other arguments that people who advocate the school of thought make, they can't really make that connection. And so they often end up including some vague line in their paper saying that there were other demand factors at work. Now, what was really going on here that the school of thought tap dances around is that you had the government borrowing enormous quantities of money, much of that debt monetized by the Federal Reserve, which meant that the Fed was essentially printing money that the government could spend. And that was flowing into the economy. And, you know, the precise mechanism is debatable. You either had too much money chasing too few goods, or, you know, households and businesses lost faith in the ability of the government to repay some of this debt. And so that caused them to start, assuming the dollar was worth less, and that increased their willingness to bid up the prices for things just to spend money while they could. Whatever the explanation, clearly this huge infusions of trillions upon trillions of dollars of borrowed money into the economy could explain how it was that people, you know, the economy was able to absorb these higher prices. And I mean, you can still have enormous distress for households in this, because none of this happens equally across the board. And particularly if the most rapid price increases are concentrated in food and energy, that's going to really ratchet up the effects on lower income households, who are also less equipped to benefit from this gusher of money that's coming from the government. So you can understand this political situation where it creates a lot of distress for a lot of voters. At the same time, the government has still helped create the additional demand that absorbs these higher prices.
I want to understand this in terms of politics, because you mentioned Bidenomics in your column. Is this an attempt to explain how the economy is better than we gave it credit for? Is that what this comes from? They have a motive here?
Yeah, I think there are two factors at work here. I mean, the longer term problem in mainstream economics is that there's this whole developed school of thought, which is very influential, that just downplays the influence of some of these demand side factors like the fiscal spending and the monetary policy. So people already, you know, a lot of professional economists are primed to just not think that this stuff is important. And then on top of that, you have this layer of a lot of the high profile economists in the Democratic Party who were big advocates of these Biden-Harris spending policies and the monetary policies that went with it, have now just gotten a big rebuke from voters. And so I think that there is kind of an incentive for them to get out there and argue pretty vigorously, no, you guys were all totally wrong and we were right all along. Because, I mean, there is an element of professional pride and reputation at work there. And so you can understand why that might motivate people to make the argument, but that doesn't really make the argument any more convincing.
Last concern, you know, what can go wrong and why? There's a great deal of money in those pieces of legislation you named that has not been spent yet. Does that mean inflation remains, if you're in the school that says that government spending, demand spending is inflation, does that mean it's up ahead of us, Joe? The Federal Reserve cannot relax?
Well, yeah, I mean, a key point of all of the spending legislation is that we talk about it most intently at the time that it's passing. But the spending is usually done over a 5 to 10 year budget window. And so as we are speaking, John, there is money being spent from this legislation that was passed over the past few years. And, you know, that is certainly one plausible explanation for why it has proven so difficult for the Fed to get inflation all the way back down to its 2% target. And so, you know, that actually provides an opening for the incoming Trump administration, because it suggests that one thing that the new administration can do to get inflation under more control is to just, you know, work with Congress to repeal some of this legislation and stop any more of the spending from coming out.
Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics. He's based in London. We're going to stay in London, life in London, under Sir Keir Starmer and the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeve.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Online reviews say I'm steep, rocky, and a difficult trail. Next time, I'm going to say, not if you're driving a Toyota truck.
We know what we're made of. Toyota trucks.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.